Ever heard about a legal battle over like a tiny little slice of oil profits?
Oh, yeah, sounds juicy.
It is actually, and it went all the way to the Supreme Court back in 1940, Milliken v. Meyer.
Okay, I know that one.
It's all about the power of home.
Home sweet home.
Exactly. But like even when you're not actually there. So it kind of raises this question, can a state court really have a say over someone who's basically skipped town?
Oh, interesting. I'm guessing the answer is yes.
Yep. In this case, it's like a blueprint for jurisdiction over those absent defendants. So, especially relevant for you legal eagles out
All
there.
right, jurisdiction, it's all about who has the power to make you show up in court.
Exactly. And Milliken v. Meyer, it really boils down to this concept of domicile, which, you know, it's more than just where you crash at night.
It's like this legal tether that connects you to a specific state, kind of like your home base, legally speaking.
Yeah.
And Milliken v. Meyer, it shows just how powerful that connection can be.
For sure. Okay, so let's rewind back to 1940. Picture Wyoming, wide open spaces, cowboys.
And a lawsuit. Don't forget the lawsuit.
Right. Our main character, Mr. Meyer, he's supposed to be a Wyoming resident, gets served with this lawsuit while he's hanging out in Colorado.
Trying to avoid the drama, huh?
Yeah, figures he's out of reach for a big mistake. He ends up losing the case in Wyoming and then tries to say, "Hey, Wyoming had no power over me. I wasn't even there."
Oh boy. Didn't he realize domicile doesn't just disappear because you cross a state line?
Nope, he learned the hard way. The Supreme Court was very clear, your home state, that's your domicile. It still has a legal hold on you. Doesn't matter if you're physically somewhere else. And get this, Colorado was initially going to enforce the Wyoming judgment.
Makes sense. State's got to play nice. Full faith and credit, right?
Exactly. But then their Supreme Court, they changed their minds and tried to back out.
Oh, wow. So it's not just about Meyer trying to dodge a lawsuit. It's a showdown between states.
You got it. This case, it goes way beyond one guy and his oil profits. Gets into this huge principle of states having to respect each other's legal systems.
That's that full faith and credit clause in the Constitution, right?
Bingo. Imagine if states could just ignore each other's rulings. Total chaos.
Yeah, the legal system would basically fall apart.
Okay, so states got to cooperate.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Colorado, they also claimed Wyoming's judgment was contradictory.
So they're saying Wyoming messed up somehow.
That's what they were trying to argue. So, was there something wonky with Wyoming's legal process in this case?
Well, that's where it gets interesting. The Supreme Court, they weren't really worried about whether the outcome in Wyoming was right or wrong. They were focused on whether Wyoming even had the authority to make that judgment in the first place. Colorado, they were trying this sneaky move called a collateral attack.
A collateral attack.
Basically saying, hey, we don't like the results of the Wyoming case, so we're not going to enforce it. But the Supreme Court shut that down.
So full faith and credit,
Yeah.
it means you got to respect another state's judgment as long as they have the power to make it, even if you don't like the outcome.
Right. It's about respecting the system. So in this case, Wyoming had the power because of Meyer's domicile. And Colorado, they were stuck with that judgment because of full faith and credit.
Okay, so that's how those two big concepts fit together.
Exactly. And to understand that power issue, we got to look at what Justice Douglas said in his opinion. He really hammered home a few crucial
Let's
points.
hear them.
Okay, so first up, domicile is king. Your home state, it has a legal claim on you, no two ways about it. Second, proper service matters. Meyer got his notice about the lawsuit. He even participated a bit. So there was no violation of due process.
Hold on. For those of us who skipped law school, break down due process.
Fair. Think of it as your right to a fair fight in court. You can't be dragged in without knowing the accusations and having a real chance to defend yourself.
Got it. So Meyer knew what was up and had his opportunity, but he chose to ignore it. What else did Justice Douglas say?
Oh, this last one is super interesting. It hints at something that becomes a big deal later on, minimum contacts. Now, this idea gets fleshed out more in a later case, international shoe.
International shoe.
Okay.
Another big one.
Huge. But you can see the early seeds here in Milliken v. Meyer. The court basically said that Meyer's domicile in Wyoming automatically created a strong enough connection for them to have legal power over him.
Okay, let me see if I can put this into a real-world situation for our listeners. Imagine you've got a client who bails on a contract and runs off to another state.
Oh, that's a classic.
Right. You might think you're out of luck, but Milliken v. Meyer shows us you might have options. If you can prove their domicile is still your state, you can potentially go after them in your own court. And thanks to full faith and credit, the other state would have to respect that judgment.
That's a perfect example. This case really highlights how important it is to understand domicile. It's not just about taxes or voting. It can determine where you can be sued and if those judgments will actually stick. So if you're ever dealing with any sort of interstate legal dispute, figuring out domicile is one of the first things you got to do.
Okay, so we've seen how powerful this whole domicile thing can be. But it's not like a blank check for states, right? They can't just like haul you into court based on domicile alone, even if you haven't set foot in the state for ages.
That's a good point. And no, it's not a free-for-all for states. Remember, Milliken v. Meyer also stressed due process. You can't just drag someone into court without giving them a heads up and a fair shot at defending themselves. Got to keep things fair.
Right, right. So there are some limits. But how does Milliken v. Meyer fit into the whole, like, big picture of legal history? Did it leave a lasting mark?
Oh, absolutely. This case, it basically laid the groundwork for how we understand personal jurisdiction, especially when we're talking across state lines. It made it crystal clear domicile, that's a strong hook for jurisdiction, even when the person isn't actually around. But it also kind of hints at a bigger principle that becomes super important down the road.
Ooh, I love those little legal breadcrumbs.
Yeah.
So what's this bigger idea that Milliken v. Meyer is pointing towards?
Well, it's this idea of minimum contacts. And it really gets solidified in this landmark case, International Shoe. Now, Milliken relied a lot on domicile, but it acknowledged this idea that, you know, a defendant has got to have some kind of a connection to the state for jurisdiction, to be fair. It's like saying, hey, even if you don't live here, if you're doing business here, stirring up trouble, or you've got other significant ties or courts, they can get involved.
That makes sense. Can't just dodge accountability by, like, hopping a state border, especially not these days. So how did International Shoe build on these ideas? Did they completely ditch domicile?
Not entirely. International Shoe kind of expanded the whole jurisdiction thing, took it beyond just domicile. They basically said, hey, it's a modern world now. Businesses are operating all over. People are moving around more than ever. We need a more nuanced approach. So they introduced this minimum contacts test, which really it's asking, does the defendant have enough of a connection to the state where the lawsuit's filed? Enough that it's actually fair and just to make them answer in that state's court.
So it's like a balancing act, trying to find that sweet spot where the state can assert its authority, but it's still fair to the defendant.
Exactly. International Shoe realized in this interconnected world, jurisdiction, it couldn't just be about where you hang your hat. It had to take into account how things really work, business, interactions, all of that.
Right. So you're telling me if I'm doing business in the state, even if I don't actually live there, I could still be hauled into their courts because of these minimum contacts?
You got it. International Shoe recognized that even if a company doesn't have a physical office or store in a state, they're still benefiting from that state's laws and infrastructure if they're doing business there. So it's only fair that they can be held accountable if their actions cause harm.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
It's like you're leaving these legal footprints everywhere you go.
I like that, leaving your mark. And International Shoe, it wasn't only talking about companies either. It goes for individuals too. Your actions, your connections with a state, even if you don't live there, those can put you under their jurisdiction. Let's say you live in Texas. But you're always jetting off to Colorado for business. You get in a car accident there. You could be sued in Colorado, even though you're a Texan, all because of those regular trips and your business dealings in that state.
So the takeaway here is International Shoe was a game changer. It said, hey, jurisdiction can't just be about physical presence anymore. It's got to reflect how we actually live and work in this crazy interconnected world.
Absolutely. But hold on. Even though International Shoe expanded things, it didn't totally check out domicile. Domicile. It's still a big deal when we're figuring out where someone can be sued. It's just not the only factor anymore.
Okay, so now we've got this like two-pronged approach to personal jurisdiction. Mm. We've got domicile.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got these minimum contacts. And they both work together to keep things fair and reasonable.
You nailed it. It's like building a legal case, brick by brick, layer by layer. And this whole development, it really shows how the legal system has to adapt. It has to stay relevant, you know, as the world around us changes.
So if International Shoe is like the more modern, updated view of jurisdiction, why are we still talking about this older case, Milliken v. Meyer?
Because Milliken was the pioneer. It established that link between domicile and jurisdiction. It set the stage for everything that came after. Think of it like this International Shoe might be the fancy skyscraper, but Milliken, that's the foundation it's all built on.
So Milliken v. Meyer, It might seem like an old, dusty case, but it's actually still super relevant. It helps us understand how personal jurisdiction works today.
Exactly. Without Milliken, we wouldn't have this clear understanding of how a state can reach beyond its borders based on domicile, even if the person's been gone for years.
All right, let's wrap this up and give our listeners the key takeaways. What are the absolute must-knows from Milliken v. Meyer? What do they need to remember for their legal practice?
First and foremost, never underestimate the power of domicile. It's not just an address on a form. It's this legal anchor. It can have a serious impact on a person's rights and responsibilities. Second due process is a big deal. You can't just decide someone's under your jurisdiction because you feel like it. They have to be properly notified, get a chance to defend themselves. That's how we keep things fair and just.
And finally, we see how Milliken v. Meyer paved the way for this more complex, nuanced understanding of personal jurisdiction, which, you know, led to the minimum contacts test we use today.
You got it. Knowing about both Milliken and International Shoe, that gives you the tools to navigate this tricky world of interstate legal battles, whether you're in court yourself, advising a client, or just trying to get your head around how the legal system works.
Absolutely. This deep dive has been amazing. We went from oil profits all the way to how domicile and minimum contacts shape the legal world. It's incredible.
It has been a fascinating journey. It's amazing how these seemingly isolated cases can have such a big impact on our legal system. They ripple outwards, you know, changing the landscape.
So to all our listeners out there, we hope this has given you a solid grasp on how personal jurisdiction works across state lines.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, these legal concepts, they're not just abstract theories. They have real-world consequences, real impact.
Absolutely. Keep those concepts of domicile and minimum contacts in your legal toolkit. They're essential for understanding where you or your clients might be subject to legal action and how that long arm of the law can stretch across those state borders.
It's like knowing the rules of the game before you step onto the field. And speaking of new playing fields, next time, we'll be exploring how International Shoe took these ideas even further. It really revolutionized how we think about personal jurisdiction in the modern era.
Can't wait to dive into that one. Until then, thanks for joining us on this deep dive into Milliken v. Meyer. We'll catch you next time for more fascinating legal insights that, you know, actually matter.
Okay, so let's dig deeper into International Shoe. You mentioned it really revolutionized how we think about personal jurisdiction. How did it change the game exactly?
Well, like we talked about, Milliken v. Meyer put a lot of weight on domicile as the main thing for jurisdiction. But International Shoe came along and said, wait a minute, times are changing. They knew that in a world where business is happening across state lines and people are traveling more than ever, just looking at where someone lives, not always enough to say if a court has power over them.
Right. So that's where this minimum contacts test comes in. What does that actually mean? Like, break it down for us.
It's a pretty simple idea, actually. It's basically asking, does the defendant, the person being sued, have a strong enough connection to the state where the lawsuit's happening, strong enough that it makes sense to make them answer in that state's court? It's about fairness. Just because you don't live somewhere doesn't mean you can just, you know, do whatever you want there without consequences.
So it's not just about your physical address anymore. It's about where you do business, where you make agreements, where your actions actually have an impact.
Exactly. Think of it like leaving footprints. Every time you interact with the state online, by mail, phone calls, even in person, you leave a little legal footprint. And if there are enough of those footprints, well, that state might be able to say they have jurisdiction over you, even if you're somewhere else physically.
That's a great way to think about it, leaving your mark. So give us an example of how this minimum contacts test might work in the real world.
Sure. Let's say there's a company based in California selling stuff online. No actual stores or offices in New York, but they've got a ton of customers there, and they're really targeting New Yorkers with their advertising. If someone in New York buys a product, it's faulty, and they get injured, that person, they might be able to sue the company in a New York court, even though the company is way out in California.
Yeah, that seems fair. Makes sense.
And this doesn't just apply to companies either. Individuals can fall under this jurisdiction thing based on their minimum contacts, too. Imagine you live in Texas, but you're always going to Colorado for work. You end up in a car accident there. Guess what? You could be sued in Colorado because of your regular travel and business there, even if you don't call it home.
It sounds like International Shoe really recognized how much the world was changing. Jurisdiction couldn't be just about being physically present in a place anymore. It had to consider how people and businesses were actually operating.
Absolutely. And while international shoe really expanded the idea of personal jurisdiction, it didn't completely throw out domicile. Where you live, it's still a strong sign of where you can be sued. It's just not the only piece of the puzzle anymore.
Okay, so now we've got this like two-part system, domicile and minimum contacts, working together to make sure courts are being fair when they say they have power over someone.
You got it. It's like building a strong legal argument layer by layer. And this evolution in how we think about jurisdiction, it shows that the legal system, it has to adapt and keep up with the world because the world's not standing still.
So I think our listeners are starting to see how important international shoe was. But we started this deep dive with Milliken v. Meyer. Why is it still important to understand that older case if international shoe is the more modern, refined take on jurisdiction?
Because Milliken was the trailblazer. It was the case that said, hey, there's a connection between where you live, your domicile, and where a court can have power over you. It was the foundation for all the developments that came after.
Gotcha. So international shoe might be the big, impressive building, but Milliken v. Meyer is the solid ground it's built on.
That's a great way to put it.
And I think it's clear now that even though Milliken v. Meyer is an older case, it's still relevant to understanding how jurisdiction works today, especially when we're crossing state lines.
Absolutely. It helps us make sense of the whole system.
Okay, let's bring it all home for our listeners. What are the top takeaways from Milliken v. Meyer AND International Shoe? What should they keep in mind, especially if they're practicing law?
All right, first and foremost, domicile. It's powerful. It's not just an address, it's a legal concept that can have real consequences. Second, due process. It's a cornerstone of the legal system. You can't just haul someone into court without fair notice and a chance to defend themselves. It's about fairness. Plain and simple.
Right. And lastly, we've seen how these two cases together show how our understanding of personal jurisdiction has evolved, from focusing on domicile to incorporating this concept of minimum contacts. It's a journey, right? The law adapts to the changing world.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Knowing about both Milliken and International Shoe, that equips you to handle those tricky interstate legal situations, whether you're arguing a case, giving advice to a client, or just trying to understand how this whole legal system operates, it's essential knowledge.
So to all our listeners out there, we hope you've gotten a clearer picture of how personal jurisdiction works. We covered a lot of ground domicile, minimum contacts, the evolution of legal thinking. And remember, these aren't just abstract ideas, they have real-world impact.
Absolutely. Keep those legal tools sharp, folks. And as our world keeps getting more and more interconnected, the reach of jurisdiction is probably going to keep evolving too. Who knows what we'll be talking about in a few years.
That's a great point. But for now, thanks for joining us on this deep dive into Milliken v. Meyer AND International Shoe. We'll be back next time with more fascinating legal insights. Until then, keep exploring, keep learning.